This is the first time in 8 weeks that I have come up after the last song in getting ready to preach. Pastor Andrew did a six-week series by the request of the elder board, and then we had missionaries speak 2 different weeks. I had the opportunity during that time period. I've been working on a manuscript that I've got the first draft done, and I'm working on the first edit, and hopefully it will go to an editor before the end of the year. It's been a good experience, and you'll hear more about that, and hopefully soon we'll have something you can read. But what Pastor Andrew did over the last 6 weeks when he was preaching, he did in concert with me. As we talked about what we needed as a church and some issues that we felt needed to be addressed, and then the missionaries came alongside and worked together as we looked towards the future of what we were going to do as Living Hope Church. Pastor Andrew has preached his first service sermon in that series was on the purpose of the church, which is to promote what is good, what is holy, and what is true. He then began to challenge us to see our place in the church, discovering our gifts, our passions, and then aligning our work with the focus of our congregation so that with increased clarity and power, we can show the generations yet to come who God is. Then Dick Gardner talked to us about how the world has changed, and particularly as it's changed in relationship to the world's perspective of missions and missionaries and Christians in particular. When, 50 years ago, at the end of World War II, when we had a major thrust of missions going out from the United States, generally the world saw Christians as terrific and trusted. But that moved to being tolerated, and now in much of the world, Christians are targeted as dangerous fanatics. And last week, Mark Hendrickson reminded us that the message of the Scripture has to include the opportunity for the removal of shame and the restoration of honor. Mark would say, there is hope for all generations. And as we formulate some ideas for the future, that's part of what we want to do. We want to give living hope for all generations. The great task of the church consists of making that hope known both here and abroad. And although we are wrapping up our missions emphasis, the missions emphasis of the church is both a here and a there proposition. And few texts bring that message out more clearly than our text for this morning, which is found in Isaiah chapter 6. This is what the word of the Lord says. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting upon a throne high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him stood the seraphim. Each had 6 wings. With 2 he covered his face, and with 2 he covered his feet, and with 2 he flew. And one called out to another and said, Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory. And the foundations of the thresholds shook at the voice of him who called, and the house was filled with smoke. And I said, Woe is me, for I am lost, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I dwell in the midst of a people of unclean lips. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Then one of the seraphim flew to me, having in his hand a burning coal that he had taken with tongs from the altar. And he touched my mouth and said, Behold, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away, and your sin atoned for. And I heard the voice of the Lord saying, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then I said, Here I am. Send me. This is the word of the Lord. Father, as we look to your word this morning, we ask that you would soften our hearts, that each of us would respond to you as you would call us to. Amen. That beautiful missionary text, Whom shall I send? Who will go? Here am I. Send me. It's commonly used as a text for a missions conference, when in reality, it is a text which encourages us all to become involved in the task of the church. It has the potential to strip away many of the objections which I have had, and which I'm guessing many of you have had, in response to the missionary call. We don't want to respond to the missionary call because, frankly, we don't really want to leave our home. We don't want to travel to a foreign land for 4 years. Some of those foreign lands eat strange food. There's one land that eats balut. Balut is like this pickled, unhatched bird. And people are supposed to eat that. Laika knows all about it. Ask her about balut. I don't want to respond to the missionary call because I don't want to eat balut. Sometimes we don't want to respond to the missionary call because we don't want to beg for support. We don't want to go from church to church hoping that somebody will pull out a $20 bill and help us get about 10 miles down the road. Because there's so much money and it just takes so long to raise support. I don't want to do it. And sometimes we don't want to respond to the missionary call because, frankly, we don't feel like we're capable. Let's leave that for the people who are smart. The people who have been to Bible school, the people who have been to seminary. You have other objections, don't you? You don't want to leave family. What if I told you that you could respond to the missionary call and not leave your friends and family? What if you could respond to God's question, "Whom shall I send?" with "Send me," and know that you could keep your job? That you wouldn't have to travel from church to church begging people to support you. What if you figured out that you could respond to the missionary call of God and not have to go to Bible school or seminary? What if responding to the great missionary call of God is simply a matter of embracing what you already know and telling others about it? Because that is what Isaiah did. Isaiah said, "Here am I, send me," and he didn't sell his house. He didn't leave his family. He didn't travel abroad. He simply proclaimed the message which is contained in the passage which we read this morning. He laid out for people the four essentials that our society desperately needs, four essentials that his society desperately needs, four truths that mankind has and always will need, contained in Isaiah chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. The first essential that Isaiah communicated and which you can communicate is that the world needs a belief in God. We live in a society which is increasingly anti-God. It's increasingly atheistic. Our society wants to deny the existence of God. They want to strip our history from any allusions to the role faith has played in the founding of our nation. They look at the world and they see chaos, not order. They deny the philosophical arguments for the existence of God because they don't want to believe in God. They want to believe in science. Because they have this myth that science is consistent. That science has the answers. Well, it does have answers. They just change all the time. Because science changes. So, the World Health Organization says that bacon causes cancer. It's in the same category as smoking. Enjoy your bacon. Because it increases your chance of cancer by like 15%, all the way from 5% to 6% to get whatever kind of cancer bacon gives you. As opposed to smoking, which increases your chance of cancer by 2,500%. You have a choice between smoking and eating bacon. Eat the bacon. And don't feel bad. Science changes all the time. And yet, many in our society say, "I believe in science. It has to be verifiable." And they've been trying to do a double-blind study on the origins of the universe, but hadn't worked. We deny God. We deny God because we don't want God. Because we want to control our own lives. And our world wants to control their own lives, so they deny the existence of a transcendent other who can make demands upon them. Our society, our world lives at a critical moment because it is at a time when more and more people are openly anti-God. If you have the misfortune of being on Facebook, you see this. Because on Facebook, the new atheists are an aggressive bunch. This weekend, oh man, how the Christians have stolen some ancient ritual of harvest or Samhain or something like that, and All Saints Day and All Souls Day. Today's All Saints Day, tomorrow's All Souls Day. Look it up, it's kind of an interesting thing. And they talk about it's all myth. It's a critical time. Because our society is embracing an anti-God perspective. In the time that Isaiah served, we're told that King Uzziah had died. King Uzziah was one of the good kings of Israel, probably the last good king of Israel. He had done much more for the nation of Israel than any king before him other than Solomon. So Israel is now at the high point of its existence, and Uzziah has died, and it's a time of hope and a time of fear. It's a time of transition of government. And there, those who were optimistic and hopeful were hopeful that the next king would be as good or better than Uzziah. The pragmatists said it ain't going to happen. Kind of like what's going on in our society over the last 20 years or so. American exceptionalism has gone by the wayside. The strength of our nation is apparently lost. It's a time of political change for us. It's a time for both hope and fear. Hope that there would be a return to that which made us great, and fear that we can never return there. In an environment not that dissimilar to what we face in the United States, Isaiah saw this vision. A vision which is so desperately needed for our time. A vision of God and a return to belief in the existence of God. We need, as a society, to have a renewed consciousness of the Almighty. Notice the description that is in this text. It's called out by the seraphim. Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of His glory. Isaiah sees this vision of God he sees the holiness of God, the power of God, the presence of God, and the glory of God. We could probably get a four-point outline out of that. And imagine what would happen if we captured the imagination of our nation with an understanding of the holiness of God, the power of God, the presence of God, and the glory of God. More than anything, our world needs to see this God once again. And once we have seen God as described here, we will begin to have a strong basis for morality. Because the second thing which our world needs, not only do we need a belief in God, but we need a basis for morality. The new atheism has risen up amongst us, and it has presented us with a challenge. Because one of the philosophical problems of atheism is its moral bankruptcy. In the absence of a transcendent being who can define morality, there is only morality which is defined by the most powerful. Morality as defined by the ruling class. Morality which isn't morality at all. It is merely a reflection of what those in power favor. Although much of the basis for the new atheism is grounded in evolution or the theory of natural selection, it is at this point of morality, of how do we treat one another and how do we treat the world, that the new atheism actually falls apart. If we believe in the survival of the fittest, then what is to prevent the strong from abusing the weak? There is no basis for saying that the fittest can't destroy the unfittest. What standard of morality determines right from wrong? In the absence of a transcendent being, then we have rejected the basis for morality. We say it's out of the goodness of man's heart. Take a look at the world. Where is the goodness in man's heart? The goodness only comes from the interjection of a transcendent being into the lives of mankind. We are living out the impact of a rejection of God. Everything is okay. There is no standard of right and wrong. In our society, there is no unholiness. Actually, the only generally accepted concept of unholiness is to suggest that there are standards of holiness, that there is right and wrong. The new atheism, the society we live in, is morally bankrupt. The prevailing emphasis upon the right of people to do whatever they want within the context of not hurting people who are politically protected, this idea that we can do whatever you want has stripped us of any basis of morality. The world says that no one can tell it what it can do and cannot do. And in such a society, devoid of any reference to a transcendent reality or a transcendent being, morality is constantly changing. It really wasn't that long ago that nearly every politician was supporting the Defense of Marriage Act, for instance. You know, that was the act that said marriage is between a man and a woman, that which is in keeping with the Scripture. Now, apparently morality has changed. Now there is no defense for marriage as being between a man and a woman. Well, here's a clue. Morality doesn't change. It is only society which says we will have morality change to fit what we like to do. Our world needs to see God once again. Our world needs to come to grips with the fact that there is a basis for morality. We need to see God and respond as Isaiah did. Woe am I, for I am undone. My eyes have seen the King, the Lord of hosts. Woe is me, for I am lost. I'm a man of unclean lips. I am a sinner. I do not measure up, and I live among sinners who do not measure up. And it is the church which is going to give our society a vision of God which will enable them to see that there is a rational basis for morality. But we need to give them more than that. We also need to give them the blessing of hope. Because an amazing thing happens to Isaiah. The seraphim have said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of His glory." And he trembles and he says, "Woe is me, I'm undone, I'm a sinner." And then one of the seraphim takes a coal from the altar and touches his lips. In the face of his own sin, God sends an angel to touch Isaiah and offer hope. It's an amazing, positive message that we have for our world. The angel says, "Your guilt is taken away. Your sin is atoned for. All is not lost. You will not be undone. There is blessing. There is hope. There is the possibility of reconciliation with God. Your shame is taken away. You know, you can do nothing on your own, but God will do it for you." This is the message we need to give to our society. A society without God needs to come back to God, recognizing their own sin and their inability to stand before that God. And then they must be given hope, that living hope for all generations. This is the picture of salvation. This is what every believer faces when they admit their need. For the Spirit of God comes down upon them, forgiving them and healing them and lifting them up and blessing them. This is what we have to offer the world. Where we live in a generation, not only have they given up belief in God, but they've pretty much given up hope. All the things which they say, which they've been told, are supposed to be secure and give them a lasting hope to hold on to, have been stripped away. We talk of things like Social Security. How many of you under 30 think you're going to get Social Security? Raise your hand up high. We'll pray for you. That's what the government offers you. There is a better hope than that. There's a better hope that we can offer to the world as they come to understand that there is a God who cares about us and that that basis of morality helps us recognize our need, and then we can give them as this blessed and wonderful hope, a living hope which is for all generations. It's the hope which we present to those who know they have crossed over lines of what is right and wrong, even while they deny those lines exist. It's the hope of forgiveness and atonement. Our need for atonement, that is, the need to be reconciled with God, arises from the universality of sin, as we recognize that it's not just me that has sinned, it's not just you that has sinned, every one of us in the whole world has sinned, and we recognize the seriousness of that sin and our inability to deal with it effectively. Isaiah understood all of this when he saw the King, the Lord of hosts. How amazing it must have been to watch that seraphim with its six wings come flying over and touch his lips, offering hope, forgiveness, blessing, and honor. This is what we have to offer the world. This is what we need to bring the world to this. That the existence of God doesn't mean just harshness. It means hope. And finally, our text is going to lead us to this. The world needs bearers of truth. A belief in God, a basis for morality, a blessing of hope, and bearers of truth. This is where Isaiah gets to verse 8 of our text. I heard the voice of the Lord say, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here I am. Send me." And this is the point where we get the heebie-jeebies. You know, we know God's asking for people to tell a message. We say, yeah, he's good at it. Let him do it. We kind of, my earphones were up too high. You didn't hear that question. As we wrap up our emphasis on missions, we really begin our emphasis as ambassadors. It's all well and good, and it's important for us to support and to pray for missionaries who go across the oceans. But the call of God to spread the message of God is not the exclusive right of people who have to speak a foreign language and eat balut. It is for all of us. God is still looking for people who believe in Him, who understand that He is the basis of morality, and who have received the blessing of hope, and in turn will commit themselves to become bearers of truth for a society which desperately needs God. There's an election taking place on Tuesday. It's kind of a minor election. It's a few, you know, school district people and a couple other little things. But in a year, there's another election. And we're going to get all wrapped up in, oh, who should you vote for? And who's going to be the best for America? You know who's going to be best for America? The person who's elected. You know how I know this? Because there's no ruler set over us. It's not set there by God. And God has a desire for all mankind to know Him. And He'll use whatever means He has to. But you know what the means He's chosen right now? You and me. God has this incredible PR arm, the public relations arm. He's got a whole committee of public relations people, and they are us. You see, God, the work of God, is accomplished through mankind. The work of God is accomplished through people like you and me. So, you don't need to quit your job. You don't need to go to Bible school to respond to God's call. You don't need to sell all your possessions and put what's left over in storage and come back every 4 years to see if it's gotten moldy. You don't have to travel to foreign lands and eat strange food and speak strange languages to tell the truth. You don't need to beg people to support you so that you can respond to God's call. You can get up tomorrow morning and go to work, respond to the call of God, and say, "Today, I will be a witness for Christ. I will do my work for Christ and His glory. I will bring Him glory in everything I do, and every chance I get, I will let people know the reason I am the way I am is because I believe in Jesus Christ." You can be a bearer of truth. today, in your home, at your workplace, in your neighborhood, among your friends, sharing our living hope with all generations. And here's some good news. We're going to help. I told you that I was working on a manuscript. The manuscript talks about why we do church the way we do church. And there are some people who want to change the way we do church. They've equated spirituality with busyness. And so they have churches, but my last church, I was required to be at church-related events 28 or 29 nights out of the month. And so were a bunch of the lay people. And I was the most spiritual guy in the church because, man, I was doing God's work every night of the week. I had 2 nights out of the month where I could spend time with my wife. That worked real well. Jesus said, we're going to help. Because first of all, we got some money available. Now, you gave the money, missions offering. We have some of that money available. If you need help, if you need someone, you need to give someone a Bible, a tract, you don't know where to go with that, come to us. We'll make that available for you. Because we have money, we took an offering last week, and part of it's going to go to our missions serving overseas, and part of it's going to go to our missions that are doing stuff right here. That is to you. If you need material, ask. We'll give it to you. Second thing, we're going to provide training. If you need training, if you don't know how to share the gospel, I guarantee you there's people that can train you to share the gospel right here in our church. We can walk you right through the 4 spiritual laws. We can walk you right through the Roman road. We can teach it to you. All you have to do is ask. And we're going to make time available. This is part of what I wrote in the manuscript. Your spirituality is not determined by how often you're in this building. Would you turn that thing off? You're going to have to hit that, and eventually that's going to stop that beep. You have the opportunity, because we're going to make time available. We're not asking you to come to church another time. We're not asking you to fill up every night of the week and come to church, because that's not a sign of spirituality. A sign of spirituality is if you've responded to the will of God, to the call of God, to be a witness to God right where you are. And we're going to make that available. We're going to give you the opportunity to mix with unbelievers. It's not a bad idea. It's the only way they're going to come to know Christ. And we're also going to make prayer available. We have a group of people who are meeting together on Sunday night. If you tell us you have someone you're praying for, give us their name. We'll pray for them. A group of people, you can join us. We're here on Sunday nights at 6:15. We're going to pray for the ministries that are going on in our church, the ministries which are an arm of our church. Those of you who are saying, I am being intentional. You know, there's this guy at work that I'm trying to share Christ with, and we'll pray for him. Isaiah comes face to face with the holiness and the power, the presence of God, the glory of the King filling the temple. He responds recognizing that he needs help. He recognizes God as the basis of morality, and then God gives him this blessing of hope. You can too. God says to you, can I send you? Will you go for me? When you get up tomorrow morning and you go to work, will you go not to collect a paycheck, but will you go to proclaim Christ? And you know, there's really 2 ways you can answer that. You can say, nah, not interested. Or you can respond, here I am, send me.